Good morning, Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello, good morning, and welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I hope that wherever you are having an absolutely beautiful and joyful day. I know we've heard a lot of horrible things on the news this week, and it makes us question man's inhumanity to man, and these things, we have to be able to look beyond that and see the beauty and the joy and the love that flows through all creation. Today, I'm going to talk to you about self-mastery, power, and joy. But first, I would like to clarify a little about what shamanism is and isn't. It's a spiritual belief system that has been around for over 40,000 years, so it is time-tested and just as viable today as it was 40,000 years ago. Basically, it acknowledges that we are spirit beings living in temporary housing, our physical body, in order to experience the pleasures and pain of the physical senses, and we acknowledge that everything is alive and inhabited by a spirit being. So we are both physical in this ordinary reality and spiritual in dimensions beyond the limitations of our physical eyesight. Our conscious mind is concerned with our physical existence. Our subconscious mind is aware of our greater self, our spirit body. We think and reason in the physical world with our conscious mind. In the spirit body, we feel with the subconscious. We say we feel in our hearts or we feel in our gut. But what I want you to understand is the difference between the physical and the spiritual self. The physical self thinks and reasons and rationalizes, and the spiritual self bypasses all those mental gymnastics and feels the truth, has inner knowing of what is right and what is the right thing to do. The physical mind is limited to the data it has accumulated from everything we've ever seen, tasted, touched, smelled, heard. It is our database, our files of everything that we have knowledge of. And that can be somewhat limited depending on what we've put in those files. The spiritual self is connected to the Great Spirit that moves in all things, the all that is, a limitless ocean of wisdom and love. I found that many people who are striving to grow spiritually are very busy. They're running around going to this seminar and that teacher and reading this book and that book and trying this new modality. And they're just very busy running around trying to accomplish the spiritual journey to enlightenment with their conscious minds, which is sort of like trying to grab a ghost with their physical hands. The spirit is mysterious, mystical, ethereal, elusive. Whole religions have been built on that concept, creating deities that are said to be beyond our understanding. And they are if you are using the 10% of your brain that is our conscious mind. The 90% of our brain that is our subconscious mind knows what the conscious brain has decided is beyond understanding. The subconscious brain has a knowing, a feeling. It is part of the all that is. So we have to learn how to use these two brains. They operate in different ways. The conscious brain thinks, and the subconscious brain feels. If you want to follow your spirit's guidance, you pay attention to what you are feeling. You go where it feels right. If something doesn't feel right, you know you're not seeing the whole picture. There's something wrong here. You listen to your feelings. And this has been clouded over with people saying things like, oh, it's just your intuition. And some people say, well, intuition isn't real. It's not reliable. It's just, you know, it's just malarkey. It's just your imagination. Those are the people who are so locked into the physical reality and the programming that they deny anything that can't be seen or measured or weighed or proven somehow with a microscope or in some form that they have physical proof of it. We have to develop two ways of approaching life because we are both physical and spiritual bodies. With our physical senses, as I said, we approach that with thinking, our thinking mind, and our internal feelings are how our spirit bodies inform us. So to walk a spiritual path, we sometimes have to overcome our doubts and fears, our egos and expectations, and our addictions to sensory stimuli. Overcoming this, gaining mastery of your mind, is sometimes called self-mastery. You must goal that you have said is. I seem to be getting a message that we're having an internet problem. Is everything okay? I hope you can hear me. Okay, so we'll go ahead. Look at the people who train for the Olympics, for instance. Ice skaters and swimmers who begin their day at 4:30 a.m. and keep up a relentless schedule of hours of practice every day of their lives in order to achieve physical mastery of their sport. Look at performers who still practice at the piano or the dance studio every days of their lives, even though they have reached fame and fortune. It's said that Liberace practiced at the piano every day for 4 to 6 hours until he died. Every day, and he was rich and famous and had achieved mastery. But, I hope we're still on the air. Are we there? Okay, thank you. Okay, folks. We seem to be having a little trouble with Skype today. Okay. Now, mastery on the physical plane requires discipline and continued practice to maintain the excellence. Spiritual self-mastery requires no less discipline and focus, and is even more difficult because it requires not just physical mastery of the body, but also mastery of the conscious mind and the subconscious spirit. Some steps that I found that helped me in learning how to get control of my mind and spirit include narrowing what I call narrowing the gap between intention and actual performance. We've all heard it said that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And we all intend to follow through on the things that we say we are going to do. But until we can narrow that gap so that what we intend to do is as good as done, our word will have no power in the universe. when intent and performance, or completion of the intent, are one and the same in our lives, we have gained control and our word is good. The universe will recognize that our word is good and our word will have power to manifest. Yogananda added another dimension to self-mastery when he said, "I am an immortal child of God, living for a little while in this caravanserai, temporary resting place, of this body. I am here to behold the tragedies and the comedies of this changeable life with an attitude of unchangeable happiness." I love that. That's beautiful. And that is so true. Now, Sun Bear, a Native American teacher, added yet another dimension when he told the story of the rattlesnake who chose to linger near one of their medicine wheel gatherings. He said it was not their intent to discriminate against Brother Snake. They would just be happier if he would choose to sun himself at a greater distance from their gathering. So one of the men fashioned a forked stick, went over and placed the fork behind the snake's head and pinned him down in order to pick him up safely. He reached down and picked the snake up behind its head and around its belly with the other hand, intending to carry it further into the woods. But as he was lifting it up, a bee started buzzing around him and stung him on the arm. This man never exhibited a twinge of concern about the bee. He walked over into the woods and released the rattlesnake and completed his task as if nothing had happened. Because as Sun Bear says, when you have the power of the universe in your hands, you do not allow little things to distract you. And the bee was just a little unimportant thing. It might have hurt like crazy, but with something in your hands that could mean life or death, you just let the little things go. So this is something we need to apply to our own lives and pay attention to what the priorities are, like that rattlesnake in the hand that really needs to be held on to in a good way and released in a good way. We need to live our lives where we're actually paying attention to the big things and not letting the little things distract us and take us off our course. So we see that self-mastery is following through on your intent, having an attitude of unchangeable happiness regardless of life's circumstances, and a control over your reactions to outer distractions while remaining centered and focused on your priorities. This is so important that we begin to apply these kind of ideas to our lives and begin to take control of our lives and master our body, mind, and spirit. In shamanism, we have an added dimension that requires mastery if we are to do powerful healing work. And that is to get ourself, our ego, our mind out of the way so that we are open to receive what the spirits are showing us without the filters of what we bring with us, without filters of our expectations and what we think it's all about and what, you know, we want it to be. Because if we allow ourselves to get involved, it changes everything. We're unable to clearly see what's going on. Ourself, of course, thinks that it's the center of the universe. Our ego is proud and arrogant. Our mind thinks it knows everything and that it can rationalize a reason for anything under the sun. We have to help ourselves remember that we are only one of 7 billion people swarming over the planet like ants. And in the great scheme of things, we are barely a speck on the mirror of life. It's not about us. We have to remind our ego that with all its pride and arrogant desires and expectations, that it is not about us. We have to lay aside our personal dreams and perspectives and concepts and step away from any claim of being superior in any way to others. We have to help our mind to stay uninvolved, because if the mind engages, it will immediately begin rationalizing and analyzing and figure out what's really going on here. To understand that it doesn't know, we have to make sure that the mind is silenced and is willing to acknowledge that it doesn't know, okay? Because the mind thinks it knows everything. And it doesn't know anything about this person that we're working with. It doesn't know any of their experiences in their life or their past lives. It doesn't know what's wrong with them. It doesn't know how to fix it. It doesn't have the answers. It just doesn't know. And once we can subjugate our conscious mind and allow ourselves to be open, then we can feel with our spiritual mind and spiritual self. Only when we have gotten the self, the ego, and the mind out of the way can we become open and clear to receive the truth. And that truth may be something different from anything we could have even imagined. And that if we're not open to receive, it would have eluded us completely. Open to receive has been called many things, like when I was a minister in the metaphysical field, we talked about emptying your cup so that you could be filled with new knowledge, new wisdom, new love and joy. It's also been called, in Zen, I believe they call it the hollow bone. And it's part of the understanding of many spiritual disciplines that we have to empty ourselves out. We do have to become hollow somehow. And it's very difficult to achieve because we are living in a physical body and a physical world with its structures and boundaries. In the physical world, we must abide by those limitations. However, being open to receive is a spiritual practice that is used within the context of a spiritual ritual, such as meditation or a shamanic journey. It's not a practice that is used all the time. It is a tool we must be able to use to receive truth, knowledge, wisdom in the spiritual world. Over time, many, many years of such practice, a person may become open to receive 24/7. And these are the highly evolved souls who become teachers, prophets, miracle workers, gurus. For anyone wanting to be a true shaman, they must master this for all their healing work and journey work. Even if they only achieve it for that hour or two when they are working to help someone, until they are clear enough to receive unfiltered wisdom, they are not ready to be shamans. Self-mastery requires monitoring ourselves all the time, paying attention to what we're thinking, what we are saying, what words are we using, what stories are we telling about ourselves, what stories are we focusing attention on as being truth about the world. We have all these old tapes that run endlessly in our minds, and some of them are self-critical, self-sabotaging. We have old programming that was imposed upon us since birth by our family, by teachers, by employers, by the government, by the hospitals, by the churches. All of this programming, and some of this is maybe no longer a viable way of thinking in our current circumstances, in our current lifestyle. So we have to start emptying our cup by weeding out and deleting the old tapes and the old programming that no longer serves us. It's a daunting task because usually our real ideas and dreams are buried so deep underneath this garbage that we don't remember them. We don't remember what it was we dreamed of being when we were little children. We don't remember what it was that so excited us that we couldn't wait to get out of bed every day and to learn more or to do more of this thing. So until you can reach that, you just start out by weeding out the things that you don't like, that you know that you do not want to have in your life. So you weed out and you weed out. And when you've eliminated all that, then you can begin to see what you do like. And then you can begin to make moves, take steps toward having more of what you do like in your life. Keep at it, and you will be the victor and authority in your life, the master of your ship. The dictionary equates authority as mastery and power. In our culture, power is seen as wealth, influence, a name, being somebody with the authority to command a country, a corporation, a political party, a ship, an army, somebody entitled to be heard and paid attention to. It's strange how we have come to those concepts, because in most indigenous cultures, power means medicine. Power and medicine have the same meaning. And medicine is good stuff, you know? And so they believe we are each born with original medicine, some gift that only we can do, and that is our unique power and purpose for being here. Our original medicine, our original power. It's the power to be who we came here to be. It's not about money or fame, although you may gain those, but it's not about those things. And it's not about conquering the world or proving you're superior or, you know, winning over everybody else. It's about living as a fully realized human being. Wow, what a concept. In shamanism, we do a lot of work with people who have lost their power and are feeling helpless and separation anxiety. They've been cut off from their spirit selves. And sometimes they have actually given away their power to someone or something that they believe in, something they believe is bigger or better than themselves. Sometimes someone has stolen their power from them, leaving them weak and fragile. Sometimes they have lost their connection to nature and to their spiritual helper or guide or angel. In all of these cases, the remedial action a shaman takes is to first retrieve their power animal. In indigenous tribal societies, from which, incidentally, we all came, back in ancient times, our ancestors were in a tribal community at some point in time. Okay? And so the indigenous peoples always saw their spirit help coming from nature, which meant from animals, trees, mountains, etc. They never saw or heard of supernatural beings such as angels until the missionaries arrived and described them and convinced people with the authority of the church that these were the only acceptable spirit helpers. It's interesting when you look back at ancient cave art and petroglyphs, that you only see pictures of animals and some strange-looking people who seem to be wearing spacesuits and helmets. No angels. They seem to only exist in biblical literature. However, the beings that present themselves to us as power animals can certainly take on that form, so that if a a human is expecting an angel as their guide, then they will appear as an angel. You see, power animals are not really animals. They are highly evolved spirit beings who are so far advanced from us that we would not be able to relate to them in their natural form. So they come to us in a form that we can relate to. And they usually choose an animal that tells us what their strength is, so we will understand how they are going to help us. A bison or American buffalo may come to help us manifest abundance in our lives. It represented abundance to Native Americans because almost everything they used and ate and wore came from the buffalo. They used every part of its body to make tools, to make covers for teepees, to make fur robes to keep them warm in the winter, to feed their tribe. Everything came from the buffalo. So if a buffalo shows up as your power animal, it's going to teach you how to accept abundance in your life and perhaps how to use all of those things that you already have in better ways, and to look at your resources and be able to pull out of your own resources the things that you need. A wolf may come as your power animal to teach you the value of family and teamwork. Wolves live in very structured family packs, and everyone has its place in that pack. And when they hunt, they all hunt as a team, and they feed by order of importance or of standing in the pack. But it's a very structured existence, and it teaches you the value of being part of a family, of working together as a family or as a team, whether that family is at your job or in your community, but it's being part of a group and being part of a team and working together to reach some goal. Wolf is an awesome totem to have. Mouse may come to teach us about taking care of details and the small things that can add up to a big success. You know, we're so often to get so busy with our lives that we don't notice the beauty that is all around us. We don't even notice the magnificent sunset or the beautiful rose blooming on the, next to the sidewalk where you're walking, or the smile from a stranger that somehow made you feel better, somehow picked up your day. All these little things, I call them pennies of happiness. All these little pennies of happiness are what build up and grow together to give us a sense of being surrounded by beauty and joy and love. And so the mouse may come to help you to pay more attention to the little details all around you and the details around your priorities that are so important that if you haven't taken care of them, the whole house of cards may fall down. So mouse is a powerful power animal. Red-tailed hawk may come to give you a keener vision so that you can really see the people around you and really see the situations that you're involved in and perhaps see what isn't working as well as what is working and be able to adjust, make some adjustments so that there's more harmony in your life and your life flows better. A dolphin may show up and teach us the importance of breath and sound. Breath is so important in every spiritual discipline around the world. Breath is used to help people learn how to drop into a meditative state, to be able to learn how to calm themselves, to be able to learn how to manage their asthma or some breathing problem they're having. Breath is so important. And now we're learning also how important sound is. Sound healing is the new paradigm of healing in the world. We found that sound, the vibrations and frequencies of sound, can kill germs, can dissolve gallstones, can work in many ways to help create health in our bodies. And so dolphin teaches us about sound, you know, the way they make their way through water and know where they're going is with their sonar, sending out a sound and listening to how it bounces back to them. So dolphin is a great teacher. Eagle may come and lift you up so that you are on such a high plane looking down and from this viewpoint, seeing the big picture of life, seeing the power of being fearless in this world. The eagle is noted for its superior strength and its ability to fly higher than any other bird, and its eagle vision that can pinpoint its prey thousands of feet below on the earth. Its speed of being able to be there within seconds. Eagle teaches us many things, and of course, throughout all of history, eagle has been regarded as a superior being. It's talked about in the Bible, it's talked about throughout mythology as a great spirit being. Deer may show up to teach us or to remind us of our own innate innocence, how when we were born innocent, beautiful, pure babies. And it also teaches us how to be gentle with ourselves as well as with others. Deer was sacred to the Buddha and is of course in modern society, the Huichol people of Mexico, that is their spirit teacher and leader is the deer. So each of these power animals brings so much to us. There are many wonderful websites on the internet with information on power animals. And there's also a great book called Animal Speak by Ted Andrews that gives an in-depth study of the global history of each animal and bird and sea creature, a reptile, insect. He covers all the bases. And he gives us not only what their strength is, but ways they behave and how they may teach us about being able to be, well, for instance, like the moose. The moose is able to almost seemingly disappear into the woods. It has a great way of being able to camouflage itself among bushes and trees and to appear to have disappeared. And sometimes that is a great talent to have. Sometimes we need to be not seen in order to really see what's going on around us. So this book teaches all these different things, also how to work with feathers and a lot about stones. And it's to me, this book is the Bible of power animal information. I would love to have had Ted Andrews on this show, but sadly he passed away in 2009. If you really want to understand power animals and how they work with you, do yourself a favor and buy this book. It's Animal Speak. And every bookstore, Amazon and any bookstore has it. Now, back to what I was talking about as far as retrieving someone's power. Sometimes all it takes is retrieving their power animal to bring about significant positive changes in their lives. When I first started learning about shamanism and I took the basic course with Michael Harner, That was the only thing I knew how to do. Of course, I came home very excited about it, and I told my meditation group all about it. And of course, everybody wanted to know what their power animal was. So, of course, I wanted to practice journeying. So I did a lot of power animal retrievals for everybody I knew. It was all just great fun and sort of like having a new toy to play with. But then, strange, then I began to see remarkable positive changes happening in these people's lives. And I thought, whoa, this stuff really works. And it made me feel a little almost embarrassed that I had treated it so lightly and that it was sort of a game to find out what's your power animal, you know? And I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. So of course I wanted to know more. And I took several more classes with the Foundation for Shamanic Studies. And over the years, I read everything I could find on shamanism and studied with many teachers. Sandra Ingerman taught me soul retrieval and extraction. And I also took courses with Tom Brown Jr. And, of course, his method of journeying is very different, but it is just as powerful and amazing. I use both methods. And it's amazing how powerful it is to work with the spirits that make themselves available to work with us. I studied with Brooke Medicine Eagle, Serge Kahili King from Hawaii. There was a Maori from New Zealand, Lisa M., who taught me some wonderful things about how to work with plants and how to access knowledge about the plants I was working with by journeying and going to the spirit of the plant. And so my journey work began to grow and deepen. And of course, my appreciation and kinship with nature and with Mother Earth became the focal point of my life. As I grew in awareness of the oneness of all creation, my heart filled with such love and such reverence and joy. The joy is just awesome. It just bubbles up and I'm always laughing and joyful. And what a way to live. It's awesome. And of course, joy is the next manifestation that I want to talk to you about. Oh, hold on. My dogs are barking at something. Okay, we'll have a little quiet now. Okay. I wanted to share with you something that was written by Teilhard de Chardin. He was a great thinker and philosopher who was actually a French Jesuit priest. And he stated it most clearly and succinctly. He said, joy is the infallible proof of the presence of God. I first saw this many years ago when I lived in Fort Lauderdale. It was emblazoned on the outer wall of a Catholic church in great wrought iron letters. And I thought that was odd, but the power of these words was undeniable. I drove by that church every day on my way to the real estate office where I worked. And every day it reminded me of the power of joy. Joy is the infallible proof of the presence of God. Later, when I began teaching meditation groups, I would advise them to pay attention to the people they were around and that they did business with or worked with, or if they were going to church or to spiritual classes of any kind. Pay attention to the joy that that person exhibits, that pastor or that teacher. Because if they have no joy, they do not have a connection with God. Somehow their connection is broken or was never there. And you can measure a person's spiritual connection and their state of health by their joy. I would ask you right now to think about yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. What is your joy level? I hope it's at least an 8 or a 9 or a 10, because that means that you're healthy and that you have harmony flowing through your life and that you are connected to the Great Spirit, to God, to the higher power. If your joy level is down to 4 or 5, you are in danger of becoming physically ill, because when our spirit body begins to shrink under this lack of joy, this lack of connection with spirit, it's like the life force energy also is dissipating from us. And when that happens, when we do not have the full force of the life force energy flowing into our bodies, we are not fully functioning. Things begin to not function properly. Organs begin to not function properly. And so if you notice where your joy level is every day, this is like your thermometer. It's like, you know, when you feel like you're coming down with a virus or something, you take your temperature and you say, oh gosh, I've got a fever. I must be catching that virus that's going around. Okay, your joy level is your thermometer, your spiritual thermometer. If your joy level is low, then you are definitely having a problem that will manifest as a physical illness or in some way in your life that is not good. So what you need to do is find ways to lift your joy level up again. And sometimes you have to do it artificially. I mean, if you're just not feeling it and you're not thinking it and you can't seem to get the hang of it, put on some music that makes you want to get up and dance. Singing and humming is a wonderful way to draw the life force energy into your body. Just making sounds, that vibration of your voice, making sounds and humming and singing draws the energy, the life force energy to you. And if you put on some, well, for me, it's good old rock and roll. I put on some good old rock and roll. I dance around the house while I'm vacuuming or doing whatever I'm doing, which would be work or chores, which you might think of as, oh darn, how can you be happy about that? But it's just stuff. It's just stuff we have to do. It's just the stuff of life, okay? So we can be happy anytime and anywhere. It's a choice. We don't have to have someone out there make us happy. Nobody can make you happy. It has to come from the inside. It's in your heart, and it's in your connection to the Great Spirit. So you check your joy level. You do whatever it takes to lift that joy level up. If it's to go eat some chocolate ice cream or to go call a friend you haven't talked to in a long time or go see that movie you've been wanting to see or, you know, or as simple as what I do, just put on some good old rock and roll and get the blood pumping again. So you do whatever it takes to raise your joy level up. And then your body begins to function again. The life force begins to flow in you again. So pay attention every day of your life. Don't get out of bed and say, oh my God, another day and I got to do this. And oh God, I've got to call that. And I got to take care of my taxes and blah, blah, blah. And wah, wah, wah. And, you know, don't do that. Don't do that. That sets the tone of what your day's going to be. When you wake up in the morning, wake up with the concept of choosing to be joyful, choosing to be happy. It really is a choice. There are so many times that we get hooked into looking at what's wrong with our lives and ignoring what's right with our lives. And there's so many. Well, there's a wonderful metaphor, a story about two men that were in prison, and they were looking out the window from their cell. It was nighttime, and they were lonely and miserable and everything, but they're both looking out at the same view, okay? And one man is looking down, and below them was a gutter that ran alongside the building and that was full of broken bottles and trash and garbage, and it was ugly and dirty, and he felt, God, this is a miserable life. It's just full of filth and dirt, and it's just a miserable life. And the other man looked up, and he saw the stars. The sky was full of stars, brilliant, beautiful, dazzling, sparkling stars. And he thought, how beautiful this world is. How magnificent this creation is. And even though I'm stuck here in this place I don't want to be, I can still look out and see all this magnificent creation. You know, every day of our lives, we have a choice to look down and see the dirt or to look up and see the stars. We have a choice of choosing what we are looking at. And some people choose to look at all the ugly stories, all the worst things that have happened, all the worst scenarios that could happen. And some people choose to look at the beauty and the kindness and the gentleness and the love. And it's your choice what you do with your eyes, what you choose to look at, what you choose to allow to be a part of your life. And so I wish you joy in your life. Joy is the lifeblood of the spirit. It's what keeps us connected, and it's what keeps us alive and the life force energy flowing through us. So I wish you joy, and I wish you self-mastery of yourself so that you gain control of your mind and your body and your spirit in such a way that you are the master of your life and you are making the choices that are the beautiful choices and the good choices for you, the loving choices of who you want to be and how you want your life to be. Now, our time is running short, so I do want to tell you that, again, I'm asking for any donations to help keep this show on the air. If you enjoy what you've heard here, if you enjoyed the wonderful guests that I've had, please join in helping contribute to keep this show on the air. You can go to www.shamanskeep.com and click on the donation page, which has a PayPal link there. So anything that you would like to donate is most welcome. It doesn't matter how small it is. Every donation is appreciated and blessed. And so I ask you that if you like the show and want to keep me on the air, please do that. If you also would like to connect with me and talk with me or have me do journey work for you, you can reach me with email at caroline@shamanskeep.com. That's caroline@shamanskeep.com. Now, next week, I have a wonderful guest. Her name is Louisa Colker. She's in Santa Fe, and she's does shamanic work as well as she's a family therapist. The following week, we will be blessed with Elliot Cohen, who wrote this wonderful book, Plant Spirit Medicine. And the last week of the month, Jaya Bear, who was wife to Sun Bear, will be my guest, and she does wonderful spiritual journeys to Peru and to Bali. So keep tuning in, and I look forward to joining you next week with Louisa Colker. Until then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence.